That Podcast Thing presents Home Movie Club. Originally recorded in May 2017. Episode 6. Shouldn't have said that.
Hello and welcome to Home Movie Club, the podcast in which we take an irreverent and sometimes irrelevant look at movies. But not just any old movies, these are the top grossing movies of their year, going all the way back to 1930. This time we're a little closer to home with the top grossing movie of 2001. This is, of course, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, or, if you live in North America, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. But is this a story so good they named it twice, or is it just because the publishers had so little faith in American audiences that they just assumed they wouldn't know what a philosopher was? Joining me to ruminate on this philosophical question are, as always, Joe Carter.
Hello!
Daisy Swaffer.
Hi!
And my darling wife, Sammy Kelsch.
What's a philosopher?
So, did this movie make us all Wingardium Leviosa, or just Petrificus Totalus?
Oh my god, you just made Harry Potter puns.
Yep.
That's setting the tone then, right? Get it?
Absolutely.
I'm there. I'm with you.
Fine. They're the only ones in there, so don't get too excited.
Oh, now I'm disappointed.
Welcome to the rest of us. Joe.
Well, it's Wingardium Leviosa, not Wingardium Leviosa.
Okay.
I had to get that in. I like that line.
So yes, Joe, any opening thoughts, or is that is your opening thought?
Oh, I love Harry Potter. And the first movie is not a bad adaptation of the book. So, you know, it's one I've watched many a time and I enjoy it.
Daisy, I know you're the big Harry Potter fan as well.
I am a very big Harry Potter fan, and I'm a big fan of the books and less of a fan of the films. But I do love the world that they built with the films. So I'm going to do my very best this podcast to judge the movie as a movie and not just keep comparing it to the book, because it's not a podcast about how does this movie compare to the book.
No,
but saying
that,
this is my favourite adaptation of book to screen, because it's the most faithful of the movies to the original book. So in terms of that, it's my favourite adaptation.
Yeah, I've seen the film obviously fairly recently for this, but I have read the book, but it's got to be a good 10 years ago maybe. So I don't really remember the book that much. So the film is kind of not canon, but that's the bit I remember of it. And Sammy, what did you think?
Okay, full disclosure, I have an English literature degree. So obviously, if a movie exists of something, I will not have read the book.
That's how it works. So, but as a film, what did you think?
I am grateful to this film for being, I think, more or less the catalyst that launched ridiculous flavored jelly bean roulette into the world.
I mean, I'm going to be a little bit more critical, because for me, this movie had a lot of problems. I said not strictly the movie's fault, because it is, as Daisy said, a fairly accurate rendering of the source material, or at least from what I remember of it. And yes, I know it's a kids' film, and there's a rich history of kids' literature containing adults being horrific to children. And it's all sort of very Roald Dahl. But, I don't know, just the scenes of young Harry being abused by his uncle and aunt, just disturbing. I guess we'll get to those shortly. Film starts with an old man walking through a very stereotypical English suburb.
But before that, it starts with the beautiful music.
Yes, you can't forget the music.
The
this
music
has a wonderful
that sets
score.
The tone for the entire film, Hedwig's theme, and it's just immediately magical. If you knew nothing about this film going into it, as soon as that music starts on that very first screen, you know you're going into something magical.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree there. I love the music.
Yes, the music is very iconic. And cute. I have it going through my head as we speak, so there you go. And I'm sure I've got it on CD somewhere, but I couldn't find it. So yes, the film starts once we have the music playing. An old man walking through the very stereotype of English suburbia. Man is dressed in strange robes and has a long flowing beard, so it's probably safe to assume he's a wizard. Either that or the local hobos have a fetish for wearing carpets. Not sure. The old man pulls out what looks like a fancy cigarette lighter, but instead of lighting something, this little device sucks all the light from the surrounding streetlights. Not that this seems to alter the level of the brightness of the street at all.
Cinematic magic.
That is magic.
Yes.
Yes, magic, and also, I mean, also I noticed that all of the houses had lights outside of them as well, and they didn't get extinguished, which well, kind of defeated the object slightly.
The object has the highly original name of the Putter Outer.
Or Deluminator, as we find out in the final book. But for all Dumbledore's effort of taking out the streetlights there anyway, Hagrid comes in with the headlamp on the front of the bike, so it was pointless anyway.
And the bike roaring.
Yeah, so... Dumbledore speaks to a cat, which then perhaps unsurprisingly transforms into an elderly witch, Professor McGonagall, played by Maggie Smith.
Yay. I liked their budget transformation sequence there.
That one, yes.
With the film of cat shadow transforms into person shadow, pan to person. Yeah,
I did think as the first special effect shot of the film, it did seem a little budget.
But I would much rather that than a really awful CG transformation of cat to person.
Oh, like definitely. A season one Star Trek The Next Generation level morph? Ugh.
I mean, this is 2001, so the special effects aren't...
I mean, they do that later in the film when they're in the Transfiguration classroom. But obviously they had a very limited budget. When they were making this film, then they were expecting it to be just like an indie British film, you know, like
a massive
Slumdog
phenomenon
Millionaire and Bend It Like Beckham type films, rather than the huge worldwide smash massive series that it turned into.
Which probably explains why every single British actor in existence has appeared in a Harry Potter film.
That and J.K. Rowling's insistence that they be British.
Yeah,
well,
fair enough.
Not all, because what's his face that plays House isn't in it?
Hugh Laurie, yes.
No, that's true, he's not. And Stephen Fry didn't make the cut.
No, but he read all the books.
He does the audiobooks, yeah.
Rick Mayall was, but we never see him. Because
he was cut out.
Rick Mayall was Peeves. He filmed the scenes as Peeves for the first film, and then they cut him out. And he didn't know he'd been cut out until they went to see, like, the early release of the film, and his kids were with him, and, Daddy wasn't in the movie after all.
I feel personally victimized by this.
Yeah, that's a shame.
But Rick Mayall would have been a great Peeves as well.
Yeah. So yes, the two of them have a brief discussion about current wizarding events when the sound of an old motorcycle cuts through the silence of the night. As you said, large headlights illuminating everywhere. A large bearded fellow with a baby swallowed to his chest flies in, lands and hands the baby to the old man. That's Dumbledore, played here by veteran Irish actor Richard Harris. Harris would portray Dumbledore in the first two films before his untimely death in 2002, after which the character was played by, obviously, Michael Gambon.
Who plays him really hippie and has this weird tie in his beard that freaked me out.
And I think you'll find his name is Michael. Did you put your name into the Goblet of Fire, Gambon?
Hagrid, who I have classified as the hairy biker on growth hormones, played by Robbie Coltrane, looks on tearfully as the baby is dropped off at the doorstep of the anonymous house with nothing but a little note as explanation.
Of the worst sort of muggles.
The worst sort of muggles. We briefly see the baby's face and a little angry lightning bolt scar on its small forehead. Aww. They all fly off, and 10 minutes later, the baby is pounced on by a band of feral cats and is killed.
Yep.
The end.
It's a shame that. Would have potentially been a great future for that baby. We'll never know.
So, that didn't actually happen, obviously. Film jumps ahead. It's 1991. Yay. And at this point, Harry, now played by a very young Daniel Radcliffe.
So young.
So small.
So baby-like.
Is 10.
You just want to grab his cheeks.
His tiny little face.
You want to
this kid's
his
getting
hair?
A lot of abuse. Don't make it worse.
I think he would appreciate some TLC and affection.
Yeah.
Actually, that's true. So yeah, we see scenes of Harry being abused by his uncle and aunt and their obnoxious son Dudley.
I love the way that Petunia tells Harry to cook the breakfast, but it's all already cooked.
Yes, the bacon and everything's ready there. He just literally walks
the
over
breakfast,
and
so he just starts taking out the pan and putting it on the plates. And even then they're telling him to hurry up. when it's like, well, he couldn't have done that any faster.
Effectively
cooked
a little bit
instantly there by being told to cook it, and he's already serving it.
That's a little bit of artistic license. You know, if we had slightly longer, which obviously we didn't because it was a very long film, then he would have put the raw bacon in the pan and then fried it up. But,
Harry Potter and the 5 minutes of Harry cooking bacon.
Exactly. Oh,
and then we'd all have been complaining, like the Dudleys.
Already long movie.
Well, I would have been complaining anyway because the fat wasn't crispy and it just looked very
yeah, it didn't look very nice bacon. Yeah.
That's the way they eat it in suburbia.
Well, it was cooked by a 10-year-old, you guys.
Yeah, not good enough. Good, needs lessons, obviously.
So they all go to a trip to the zoo to celebrate Dudley's birthday.
Oh, hang on. You've got to mention the absolute brattiness of Dudley and his presents. He doesn't care how big the presents are. He just wants more than he had last year. He just wants stuff. It's nauseating.
It is nauseating, yes.
I mean, wrote down, it's a wonderful demonstration of what spoiling a child can result in.
Yeah. I mean, that is a form of child abuse as well.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, they certainly don't ever say no to him in any way, shape or form. No. As we see in many occasions.
Okay, now you can go to the zoo.
So, now they go to the zoo. They go to the reptile house and Harry realises he can speak to snakes, which is odd, obviously.
Yeah,
it's a useful skill.
So he speaks to the snake. Dudley notices the snake and pushes Harry to the floor to get to it.
It's a good sweeping shove, that, as well. I was quite impressed by it.
So he starts shouting and banging on the glass, trying to get the snake to, I don't know, do tricks or something. It's a snake, what do you expect? But yeah, at this point, I don't know, was it Harry blinking or did he do the whole sort of wrinkly nose type thing in My Dream of Jeannie?
He's just staring.
He's just looked at it, yeah. He's not doing any physical manifestation of the spell.
It's all pure mental.
And suddenly the glass that is being hammered on is just suddenly not there. It's like magic.
There's no such thing as magic, to quote Vernon Dursley.
And Dudley falls into the snake enclosure and everybody panics.
Ha! Well, the snake escapes! Woohoo!
Yep, says, so the snake slithers away.
Oh, freedom. Sorry, I need to stop doing that. I'm not comparing it to the book.
Well, thanks has an S in it, so it can slither.
And he slithers away and then gets captured by the zookeepers and shot.
No, it doesn't. You don't see that.
They're only shot with a tranquilizer dart, I'm sure, because they do want to retain the animal.
Well, I imagine it's quite valuable, but the best part is that when you turn back to the cage, the glass has reappeared, and we now have Dudley in a box.
Yep.
Yay!
And of course, his parents go to bits, and it's all like, "Oh, poor Dudikins," and Harry's sitting there laughing.
I do pity the zoo staff at that point who will have had to A, actually get him out of there somehow, and B, face some kind of internal inquiry as to how on earth that happened.
If this was America, the Dursleys would be like filing a massive lawsuit against the zoo, and they'd settle for
millions.
They
then also have to capture the snake again, who probably isn't keen on going back into the enclosure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what happens to the snake? We never find out. Perhaps he goes off and lives a happy life somewhere.
So it's all fun and laughs for Harry Potter, but I think we can all actually take a moment to think about the zookeepers there.
The Dursleys eventually get home and Uncle Vernon actually physically assaults Harry, grabs his hair, and then locks him in his room, which, as we all know, is the cupboard under the stairs.
Yeah.
Yes, the cupboard under the stairs.
Yes, I think room is a very generous word for that.
Yeah. It is a space. It is a very small space. It's a good thing he's small and hopefully not claustrophobic.
No, although something like that would probably make someone claustrophobic.
Yes.
At some unspecified time later, Harry gets a letter delivered with strange ornate writing on it. But Vernon, which is his uncle, spotting the sender details, which are helpfully written on the back. Hogwarts is secret, so let's just write the address on the back of the envelope.
Well, it's not secret if they're sending it an invitation to attend.
True.
Mina Lima, who are the like the graphic designers and the principal prop makers for the whole series, that really gave us a real sense and feel of the Wizarding World through all of their design. Mm. They had to make literally hundreds of identical copies of that letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. He basically takes the letter off Harry, doesn't let him have it. Another arrives.
Oh, doesn't he put it in the food processor?
He does something with it. He tries to burn one. He shreds one. He for some reason, I mean, it becomes increasingly obvious as more and more letters arrive, the nerves of Uncle are getting more and more frayed, and it gets to a point where he actually sticks a wooden plank on the inside of his door to stop letters coming through the letterbox.
Yes.
Which is not the act of a sane person, because obviously you also get things like bills and other things through the letterbox.
Pay stubs, Waitrose vouchers.
But at this point, you know, his hair looks like he's run his hands through it. He's sort of slightly red and going a bit apoplectic, and he just sort of looks like he's losing it.
Yes, Richard Griffith is doing a good line in going slightly mad at this point.
Mm-hmm. Gotta say, those owls are very tenacious, though. They're just like, we need to deliver this letter to this one particular person, and we're just gonna keep on trying.
But they deliver the letter and then just sit and watch what happens. They don't fly off.
Well, they need to know whether or not the letters made it to their intended recipient.
So
letters keep coming, and eventually the whole house is rocked as
no post on
Sunday. Yes, I was going to say, he's sitting there with his biscuit, going, "Oh, great day,
Sunday,
Sunday.
Marvelous no
day,
post,
marvelous day, Sunday."
And then hundreds and hundreds of letters start sort of screaming in through the chimney and through the front door.
Yeah, the plank of wood. He says no post on Sundays. And then it cuts to outside where the house is literally surrounded by owls. And then pause for a dramatic effect. Whoom! Full of letters.
Why doesn't Harry pick a letter up off the floor?
He has one in his hand.
Like it's the Crystal Maze Dome. Instead of just scooping some up off the floor.
But I think at that point, I mean, he's obviously, you know, I don't know, he's got a fairly joyful look on his face as he's chasing after these letters, so...
Yeah. And the thing is, he tries to go for his cupboard, which is kind of useless anyway, because he can't lock himself in. He only gets locked in. He should have gone straight for the front door.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, this is why he's not in Ravenclaw.
Yeah, this is true. He's not been known for his intelligence.
This is the last straw for Vernon, so he cracks and whisks his family off to a remote cottage somewhere. It's on some rock somewhere, I assume, off the coast.
The house on the rock. Mm. Yeah. They had to get a little rowboat out there to get to it.
Yeah.
So, yes, we see Harry sleeping on the floor, celebrating his 11th birthday by drawing himself a cake in the dirt on the floor.
Mm. As he watches on Dudley's wrist as his wristwatch ticks to midnight, and then he's like, "Happy birthday.
I'm 11.
Blowing out his dirt candles.
But then, yes, the whole household is woken by a large crash as the wooden front door is burst from its hinges. Hagrid appears and basically goes, "Oh, sorry about that," and puts the door back.
Robbie Coltrane really was masterful casting for Hagrid.
He was the first person cast as well, apparently.
Yeah.
So.
J.K. Rowling did say that she had him in mind when writing Hagrid, so that makes sense. So I'm glad that he agreed to do the role.
So perfect.
So Hagrid appears, and after basically calling the Dursleys horrible human beings,
which is true,
he says that Harry is a wizard.
You're a wizard, Harry.
You're a wizard, Harry.
He's been accepted into Hogwarts,
and that he is...
You're a lizard, Barry.
He's always been accepted to Hogwarts due to his parents. Not that he's saying what Hogwarts is or anything like that, so, you know.
Yeah.
Because he's not actually been able to read a letter because they've been kept away from him, so...
Oh, but the best bit is that he sort of says, "Happy birthday," and says, I got you something. I baked it, letters and all." And then he pulls out this slightly squashed cake with "Happy birthday,
Happy
Harry" on
birthday,
it.
Harry.
And it was still better than
it's
I could
just,
have made.
That just is really adorable. And you can just see that Harry is completely touched by it because he's obviously never had a present or anything in his life.
No one's ever made him a cake before.
And this complete stranger has baked him a cake. Okay, he sat on it, but, you know, the thought's there.
I bet he'd love that cake, even if the crumb is slightly dense and it's slightly underdone in the middle and the frosting is melting a little bit. He'd still
and
love
it's a bit
it.
Wonky and lopsided. And...
But I love way that it's the middle of the night and they're in this house on a rock in the middle of, an ocean of some kind. And Harry just goes off with this complete stranger.
Like, I think at this point anything is better than his exact life.
He brought me
life.
A cake. Yeah. Sure, anything's better than this. I'll go
but
with
he
you.
Also brought in the letter and he got to read the letter. And then
stranger
you know.
Danger. Stranger danger.
Yeah.
So Hogwarts is calling and Harry is whisked away to the worlds of wizards and witches.
Yay!
Finally!
And so our story begins.
And so our story begins, where all stories begin, where all good stories begin, in the pub.
Yay!
So the first thing to do is Hagrid takes Harry to the pub.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have to go through the pub to get to Diagon Alley.
Yes.
So British.
But obviously, Harry is seen to be a bit of a celebrity because everybody seems to know who he is, much to the confusion of Harry himself,
which Hagrid didn't really warn him about. He didn't really say, so let me just let you know that people are gonna know who you are. That's
just
be
a heads
weird.
Up no, it's fine, you'll find it out for yourself.
Has anyone like actually sat down through this movie and kept a running tally of how many times people say the name Harry Potter?
Probably somebody
like
has
a ton.
I feel like it could be a drinking game.
That
oh, God.
Joe, no, because you will pickle your liver.
I can tell you exactly how many spells Harry Potter cast in this film. Zero.
Is it?
Oh.
Harry did not cast a single spell in this film.
No, I was just thinking and I couldn't think of one he did.
He did in the book, but not in the film. He didn't cast a single spell.
No, because he couldn't get the thing to float and he couldn't do it, yeah.
Presumably in between shots he is doing magic, but in what we're actually seeing on film, by the very end he still hasn't actually cast a spell on screen.
And I guess we should also get this out of the way. What was the death count of this film, do we know?
Well, Quirrell dies. Well, Lily and James die at the very, 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 very... Oh, no, not the very start. When we get a flashback later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get a flashback fairly
There's
soon,
flashback.
But yes. So, so
Lily
and
James
die.
And Quirrell. So
three.
Yeah, I think that's our total death count.
That's three.
Fairly low.
For a kid's film, it's quite alarming, but, you know.
No, that's pretty low.
So they go to the pub. They go through the pub and go...
And it's the first time that we meet Quirrell.
Oh, yes, of course. Not only have they gone to a pub, they've met one of the teachers in the pub.
They've essentially bumped into Voldemort already.
Yeah,
before
but we don't
Harry
know that at this point.
Knows
so.
About that.
Is he... No, but he's not in Quirrell at that point.
But Quirrell's wearing the turban.
Well, he always wears the turban. It's stuffed with garlic to ward off vampires.
Didn't wear the turban before he went... This is beyond the film stuff. He didn't wear the turban before he went off on his little... adventuring to go and find Voldemort, and then he started wearing the turban only when he had
Voldemort. Also, doesn't Harry's scar hurt when he walks into the pub? Is that not a bit of a hint?
No, his scar hurts at the welcome feast. But I think
in the book, Quirrell probably isn't wearing a turban at that point, but they just kept him with a distinctive
look. Well, he's wearing a turban because that's his character, but when he's talking to Harry at the end... He goes, when he failed to get through at Halloween, then he was punished and Voldemort merged with him at that point.
But that's in the book.
And no, that was in the film.
I think Voldemort is already there. If you bear in mind that the welcome feast, which is pretty shortly after this, when Quirrell turns the back of his head towards Harry... Then Harry's scar hurts at that point.
So they go into Diagon Alley, which is a magical place hidden from the sight of muggles, apparently, where everybody dresses like a Victorian.
The leaky cauldron, the pub they've just been in, is hidden from muggles as well, so you don't get random muggles walking into the pub.
So yes, they go to Gringotts Bank, which is great, because I think no one in Diagon Alley has heard of a right angle. Or an upright bit of wall.
You don't need right angles and upright bits of wall when you've got magic.
And goblins.
So they go to Gringotts Bank to claim Harry's inheritance and for Hagrid to reclaim a secret item from one of the vaults.
The you-know-what from you-know-where.
You-know-what from you-know-where.
You-know-which.
For you-know-who. Yeah. No, that's a different person. for Dumbledore. We can
say so obviously Harry's inheritance seems to be a big pile of gold. Although, being new to the wizarding world, I do wonder if Harry knows how much that asset is worth.
No, he's got no idea.
Because that could be, you know,
what is that in pounds?
Well, yeah, that could be due to inflation, just about £4.50. He just doesn't know. It looks like a big pile of gold, but who knows?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the goblins aren't giving a very good rate of interest there.
Probably no, not.
What they're paying for holding it is probably not good.
What is the pound galleon exchange rate?
Plus, fact that is a very big pile of gold. I'm sure
I
he didn't take all of that in one go.
I think a galleon is about
go,
a fiver so. In English money.
I thought it was 10 quid. Okay, fair enough.
Probably was 10 quid when they made the
there you go. Mm.
But I mean, yeah. It is pure gold, so
well,
it's even it's worth
moment,
its weight.
It's probably about 15 quid.
It's been a while since I looked at that kind of stuff as well, so I might be at...
So Harry and Hagrid go shopping for the stuff Harry needs for his first year at Hogwarts, including, obviously, the all-important magic wand. Harry visits Ollivander's store, and a bit of trial and error. He settles on a wand that has a link to Harry's tragic past.
When its twin gave you that scar.
Yeah, with a phoenix feather in the wand being the same bird that supplied the... Is it supplying the magic or supplying the...
It's
I don't
core.
Know what it does.
The core of the wand.
Supplying the core of the wand for Voldemort.
And it was Fox, the phoenix, that gave
it was.
Feather.
Was it? Yeah. Ah, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. There you go. Maybe we don't see it in this film, but we will do it at some point.
Yes.
So that, as you said, the very one that gives Harry the scar on his forehead. Hagrid returns, having just popped off, leaving Harry alone in a strange environment.
But it was to go and get Harry a present.
And get Harry a present in the form of a snowy owl, Hedwig.
Because it's Hagrid, so far as Hagrid's concerned, the best thing that anyone could possibly have is an animal. So he goes and gets him an animal, which I think is just so
a vicious
nice.
Bird of prey, which is a perfectly suitable gift
but
for an 11-year-old.
But to Hagrid,
obviously.
That's just like the best thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's so nice. I love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
At least
it's
they didn't
so
get him
Hagrid,
the bat
you know?
That was hanging there. Mm. So they stop off for a bite to eat, and Harry convinces Hagrid to tell him what happened to his parents. He tells him of Voldemort and how he tried to wrest control of the wizarding world, killing all those who stood in his way. Including Harry's parents. And he even tried to kill Harry himself.
What, me? He
the
tried
rotter.
To kill me? Sorry.
Yeah. Not you, Daisy, no. Harry.
Sorry. It's just the kind of the overacting way of the delivering of the line sometimes really sticks in my head.
But he is 10. Give him some 10, 11. But for some reason, Voldemort was unable to kill Harry, who became known as the boy who lived. Mm. Or like the rest of the boys who lived, I don't know.
They lived in less remarkable circumstances.
Yes.
Can you get less remarkable than the Dursleys? I'm not sure.
But what happened to Voldemort, Dave?
Well, they don't know. They said he might have died, but that was... What was he said? Hogswallop? No, not... Codswallop.
Codswallop. Codswallop, yes.
Which is a brilliant old English phrase. Codswallop.
I don't reckon there was enough human in him to die.
So they make their way to... It's King's Cross Station, isn't it?
Yeah.
But is it actually not King's Cross
well,
Station?
They show the exterior
it...
of St Pancras, but that bridge that they're walking across was in King's Cross, but they've since taken it down, much to very vocal objections from Harry Potter fans.
Who obviously have a big say in the running of major
Well, obviously not, because they took the bridge down.
Well, they keep moving platform 9 3/4, so
yeah.
So Harry's handed a ticket for Hogwarts Express, leaving from platform, as you said, 9 3/4.
In a few minutes. I mean, you know, cutting it close.
Yeah, you know, give me a few minutes.
Why are we there at least 20 minutes early?
Harry's obviously rightly confused by this, as there's no signage for platform 9 3/4.
So can I have a little rant at this point?
Of course you can.
Thank you.
Rant away.
So, you know how sometimes watching the kids read their lines in this film can be really cringy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that, I think, is not the kids' fault at all, but is down to the dialogue. The dialogue that's been written is not written how an 11-year-old speaks.
Yes.
So at this particular point, Harry Potter says, "But Hagrid, there must be some mistake. This says platform 9 3/4. There's no such thing. Is there?" And I've never heard an 11-year-old speak like that. And it's
well, no, that's
minute...
the entire three sentences without a swear word in it for a start.
In a minute, we'll get Hermione going, "Holy cricket, you're Harry Potter." Now, I was 11 in 1991. She was Muggle raised, so just like me. And we never said "Holy cricket."
Yes, but what you said probably wasn't available to be used in a children's film.
Nor did I swear at 11.
No, neither did I.
I did.
Just me then.
Would have
not
my
just
mouth
me then.
Washed out by soap, probably.
Yes, obviously no signage for platform 9¾ and gets short shrift from a station attendant when he asks about it, which I thought was odd because I'm sure people who actually work at the station must at least have a vague inkling about platform 9¾.
They would notice people ramming themselves into, you know, sort of a bit of brick wall or whatever it was.
Well, of course they
would. Probably
wouldn't.
Like a Muggle charm around it that stops Muggles from noticing what's going on.
What, like
there.
A magic yeah. perception filter?
Yeah.
It's all
like
very convenient in many ways.
That repels yeah. them away in that
I
way.
Mean, obviously this is 91, so this is before the huge proliferation of any kind of CCTV network, but even so.
Yes, but magic interferes with technology, so even if there was CCTV, it wouldn't record it.
It's all so convenient, isn't it?
Ugh, magic is so stupid.
Yeah. And the kids wouldn't normally be asking the staff about it either because they would normally have an adult with them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't beg the question, how did Hermione know about it? Because her parents are Muggles, so therefore they're in the dark as well.
When
yes.
When a Muggle born is gets their Hogwarts letter, they get a visit as well. Like we see in Half-Blood Prince when Dumbledore goes to see young Tom Riddle, they get a visit to explain the whole situation to them.
Yeah, I believe Professor McGonagall explained it all to her and her parents.
Okay. So yes, thankfully he overhears a woman talking about Muggles, a phrase he's learned from Hagrid, and so follows the lady and a pack of various aged ginger kids.
You say ginger with such disdain.
Is it pack Sorry. For a bunch of gingers?
It's a, definitely
the
a pack for kids,
noun
yeah.
For gingers.
I think pack's probably the fairest one. Harry watches with astonishment as the oldest one seemingly runs at a wall and disappears from sight. He asks the lady, Mrs. Weasley, played by English comedian Julie Walters, about getting to the platform, and with a bit of advice, he runs at the wall and finds himself on a secret platform with a bright red steam locomotive waiting to take Harry and his fellow students to Hogwarts.
And a handy-dandy sign on the wall saying platform 9¾, in case the Hogwarts Express sign on the front of the train wasn't obvious enough for him.
Yeah, and the fact that you've gone through this invisible barrier
yep.
to get to it.
Yep. Mm.
You go through the Miss Byron and it says platform 2½, you know you've gone the wrong one.
You know, no one ever, ever, ever checks the tickets, and yet Hagrid was like, stick to your ticket, Harry. No one
well, the tickets
ever
are probably magical.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe
and then the train would probably
through.
Chuck you off if you didn't have your ticket.
The ticket's never mentioned in any of the following books either. So.
Perhaps you have to have the ticket to go through the wall.
Yeah, but then...
Well, no, because Mrs. Weasley and Ginny don't have a ticket.
Yeah. No one ever has a ticket ever again after that.
Fair
I
enough.
Think it's just a Hagrid
so,
prank.
What we're saying is, if you want to go on the Hogwarts Express, don't worry about tickets.
Yeah, stick to your ticket.
If you can get on the platform, then you're welcome to go, I reckon.
Yeah. So Harry gets on the train and he finds himself sharing a carriage with Ron Weasley.
Well, we see a shot of the train going through the countryside, which is obviously quite away from London. And
at
then
least
we
half
see,
an hour.
Yeah, then we see Ron come into the carriage and going, you know, can I sit here? There's nowhere else. How long has Ron been going down that train for?
Has
looking
he just
in
been
every
pacing
single
the
carriage?
Aisles forlorn.
And if the rest of the train is entirely full, why is no one else in that carriage either?
Yeah.
So yeah, he finds himself sharing a carriage with Ron Weasley, Rupert Grint. They chat, then eat sweets together.
So the woman's coming down. So we can assume at this point that Ron's come to the end of the train. If he's checked, he spent goodness knows how long checking this train, and this is finally there's a compartment with some space in it. And so therefore this trolley is at like the beginning of its journey down the train, and Harry buys everything on the train, everything on the trolley. So no one else on that entire train gets to have any sweets or treats from the trolley.
But it's a magical
right?
trolley.
I think that's really selfish of him.
To be fair, though, she was at the start of it. She could have gone back and just refilled.
Yeah, it was a magical trolley. It magically refills. And the point of that scene was that he discovers the first time in his life he has money. And he has a potential new friend who has weird combi sandwich mush. And he just wants to share and experience a bit of joy. Oh, come on.
He could have said, I'll have two of everything. But instead he said, he'll have everything.
He's 11. That's what 11-year-olds do.
That's absolutely what an 11-year-old would do.
It's also, and Harry Potter doesn't think ahead or beyond himself and the people he's immediately with.
So we meet Hermione Granger.
Yay,
who
Hermione.
Is played by Emma Watson.
And she does what Harry doesn't do in the entire time that Harry sat there and lets Ron know that he's got some dirt on his face, which is what all of us want someone to do when we've got something on our face.
So yeah, she comes in, she's sort of briefly speaking to them. She's showing off her magical prowess, which is sort of...
Showing off. She's being helpful and fixing Harry's glasses.
She's having a go at this magic that's brand shiny new to her. And
yeah, she's
tried
really
things and they've worked and it's super exciting.
Can I observe something? Or can I just ask a question? Like, statistically, what is the likelihood that on your very first... You're not even at school yet. This is your first excursion towards the school that you're about to go to. And the first two people you meet are the ones who become your best friends for the rest of your life.
There is a very small pool of people, though. Like, in each year group, there's not that many. And if you're primarily making besties with people in your own house, then that's about 10 in your year group, 5 girls and 5 boys.
Actually, that's true, because I thought that as I was watching the film, is that when they do the sorting hat, which we'll get to shortly, there really wasn't that many first years. Mm. I always assumed that a school year would be, you know, several classes of 30, but it really isn't, is it? It's not like a proper English school system.
Well, they didn't do the entire sorting ceremony.
No, because that would have gone for a long while. Because
then, you know, it would be
this
like...
This film is long enough.
And
but there's still only 4 houses.
Child extra,
and...
Ravenclaw!
There's still only 4 houses and approximately 10 children, so you've got at most 50 in the year. And it's basically split into a couple of houses per each lesson, I believe.
So with those limited numbers, then there's reasonable odds.
They are getting close to Hogwarts, so they change into their school robes. Although there doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know, changing facilities on the train, so that begs a lot of questions as well.
Well, they just put the robes over the school uniforms. It's not exactly...
Yeah,
you know.
True. They finally get to Hogwarts. They disembark from the train, although the station does look to be a good mile or so further down the valley than it probably actually needs to be.
Well, because the station is in Hogsmeade.
Yeah, that's true.
See, I told
yes,
you, it's in Wizard Town, and then Hogwarts is slightly outside of Wizard Town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they get carriages or boats, depending on which year they're in, up the road.
Yeah, the first years are all...
First years. I can't do Hagrid very well.
So everybody gets piled into these little rowing boats, and one hopes it's not raining or, you know, stormy, because it is Scotland. And they're ferried across to the school.
And it's our first look at Hogwarts.
Yes.
And it's
which
magical.
Is rather iconic.
And all the exterior shots of Hogwarts are of this 1 to 24 scale model. And you can see that model if you go to the Leavesden studio tour, and it makes you weep when you walk in the room, and it's amazing.
So they're all greeted by the head of House Gryffindor, who's Professor McGonagall. And they're told to be going to be sorted into houses, which is important because their house is their family.
And then Neville finds his toad.
Yay!
Neville
and it's really embarrassing.
Important bit.
I like that the toad made it off the train, on the boats, all the way into the castle, to the top of the stairs, without Neville being aware of the toad at all and all that time.
Well, this is Neville.
Yeah.
I think the toad is probably the most with it of all of them, to be honest.
Yeah, real.
Well, it is a magical toad.
And then we finally meet Malfoy for the first time. We've met him much earlier in the books, but I think the film was long enough without us having more scenes.
We didn't really need to see Harry getting fitted for his robes anyway.
No, we didn't, no.
No. So yes, they're all sorted through the sorting hat, with Leslie Phillips being suave and slightly weird.
The floor of the Great Hall there was actually made of York stone, which you won't get in most film sets because they were anticipating the heavy footfall from all of the, not just all the filming, but all the hundreds of children and that the set would need to be there for the entire duration of the series. So they just went all in at the start. York stone, make that a good proper floor.
That's right.
So I know there obviously there were also interiors that were filmed in our local neck of the woods in the Oxford University.
Yeah, the Bodleian Library, most notably. I don't know.
Bodleian, and also Christchurch. Some of the Great Hall stuff was in Christchurch as well.
Mm. The Great Hall in this one stands out to me because it's the only one of the films where they're wearing the pointy hat.
Oh, God, those stupid hats.
Well, they're wearing pointy hats in the book, so they put them in pointy hats then, and then they didn't have them in pointy hats at any other point
because
until
it made
the
them
very
look
final.
Like garden gnomes!
Thing. Yeah. And then after that film, they went, let's just bin the pointy hats because they look ridiculous.
Yeah.
Thank goodness
for that. So sorting happens, and Hermione, Ron, and eventually Harry are all sorted into House Gryffindor. As we've alluded to, there are four houses in Hogwarts, although for this film, there only seems to be two that seem to matter. Sorry, other houses. And that is, of course, Gryffindor and Slytherin.
Well, that's because we see everything. It's Harry's story, and we get
it
everything
is Harry's
from Harry's
story.
Perspective.
Yeah.
And from Harry's perspective, they are the only two houses that matter.
Yeah. Gryffindor students are considered to be good and kindly, while Slytherin are known to be ambitious, cunning, and just that little
bit evil.
Not
a witch
evil.
Or a wizard that went bad that wasn't from a Slytherin house. But there was. They just don't know about it yet.
Why bother having it then? Just,
like,
you know.
Like, literally.
Because you could do great things and Slytherin will help you get there.
I know. I've heard wonderful defenses of, you know, sort of like the Slytherin people as, no, they're not actually bad. But let's be real. This movie, just for the sake of this film, it sets it up as though it's basically the house of, you know, sort of like the evil people.
House evil, yeah.
Yeah, it's like literally, child, you are a bad person. You get to go to the diabolical children house. Like, what?
We will send you to evil genius classes.
What system is this? I'm sorry, but you can't just take 11-year-old children and just arbitrarily stick them into, you know, sort of like class/social castes based on a superficial read of their supposed personality traits, which, you know, are no way going to grow and develop and change as they go through their adolescence. Never mind the fact that you should be encouraging them to socialize as diversely as possible among their fellow students.
Yes.
Who thought that this was a sound educational system? Wizards are idiots!
The four founders of Hogwarts thought it was a sound system, and in all the time since, they've never changed it. And I think that's one of the big takeaways that you can get from the book series, particularly as a whole, is that kind of segregation and putting people in buckets of you are this kind of person is not helpful to people at all. And I think probably the Hogwarts of the future is a lot more mingled and less separated in that
way. I'd like to hope that it's a more integrated educational system. I mean, just because something's tradition and you've been doing it since like the 11th century doesn't mean it's a good thing.
Yes. So we meet the main antagonist for this film, which is Draco Malfoy, played by Tom Felton, who acts as a foil for Harry and co, while still managing to be a little bit useless.
Because he is still just an incompetent 11-year-old kid as the rest of them.
Yarp.
When Hermione gets sorted, I do wonder whether or not, because she's obviously read all about all the Hogwarts houses, she's read a Hogwarts history and every other book she can get her hands on. And I wonder if she was expecting that she was going to get sorted into Ravenclaw, and if she was surprised that she was sorted into Gryffindor, or if she'd already kind of thought, well, I like the Ravenclaw stuff, but I think I'm probably more of a Gryffindor myself, because it takes your choices into account as well. I do wonder what was going on in Hermione's head when she got sorted.
I think she probably convinced the sorting hat, just like Harry did.
I'd be interested to know what what was going through her mind.
Yeah, so the school happens, and that involves lessons. So obviously they're taught potions by the head of House Slytherin, Professor Severus Snape, played by the late, great Alan Rickman, in, has to be said, quite a pantomime mode in this one.
Oh, he delivers his lines just wonderfully.
He does. It's a wonderful delivery, but it is also ridiculously over-melodramatic.
The pauses that he puts in and things that I would just never have thought, and just like the emphasis and particularly pronounced syllables and things. It's just so unique to that character, and it just evokes Snape so wonderfully.
And he flounces.
Yes, and he flounces.
He does flounce. He definitely flounces.
He flounces beautifully.
So they have all these lessons. They also have broomstick flying lessons with Zoe Wanamaker's Madame Hooch.
And they have the owl post.
An owl post. That actually begs the question whether the Wizarding World has even ever heard of basic health and safety.
Clearly not.
They have a hospital wing. Of course they haven't.
I'm sorry, but if when I was an 11-year-old child, if we were so much as to be allowed to play, you know, floor hockey, we had to wear protective headgear and goggles.
Yeah, so literally within a minute of a group of 11-year-olds being given access to flight, one of them, Gryffindor's Neville Longbottom, crashes and breaks his wrist.
Mm. Oh, but you've got to mention the look on Ron's face when he goes up. And the broom just smacks him in the face. Aww. I crack up every time.
Comedy value.
That was adorable.
Yeah.
That CG of Neville on the broom and falling at the castle, though, that was really... They needed some more budget there.
Mm. Yeah, it was another point where... Bad. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if it was bad or just of the time.
No, I remember CG at the time thinking it was bad.
Hmm.
So yes, Madame Hooch takes Longbottom to the medical wing and leaves the other children to it, which is a bit like leaving a bunch of kids unsupervised at a gun club. Obviously, we then get Draco being a about Longbottom and Harry stepping up to defend Neville's honour. This kind of ends up with Harry flying about on his newly acquired broomstick, showing surprising skill for someone who a short time ago didn't even know broomsticks were an option when it came to flight.
He's a natural. It's the only thing he's actually good at. The only thing.
McGonagall witnesses Harry's flying skill and drags him to see Oliver Wood, captain of the Gryffindor Quidditch team.
And then just like that, no tryouts. No, yep. Wood doesn't even need to see for himself. It's just, bang, you're a keeper now.
Well, she is... Yeah. She is the head of the house, so I guess she possibly has authority. But it's like, this is your new seeker. He's been on a broomstick for 5 minutes. He's never even heard of Quidditch.
And that might have been
what could possibly go wrong. Yeah. So Harry agrees to join the team when it's pointed out by Hermione that Harry's father, James, is also a seeker.
Was.
was also a seeker. We see Harry and Ron and Hermione heading back to their dorm when one of Hogwarts' architectural oddities reveals itself, and a stairway they're climbing on starts to move and swing across to a new set of doors.
And they just go, shrug, we'll just go through this then. Oopsie, it's a place we're not supposed to be.
Yeah. Three of them go through a strange door and find themselves on the third floor corridor off to the right, an area strictly off limits to students. So they turn around and go, but no, they don't. They wander onwards and find themselves face to face with a huge three-headed dog guarding a trapdoor. Which confused me.
But they opened the locked door using the most ridiculous Alohomora, which is why do wizards lock doors that can just be opened with a really simple spell an 11-year-old can do? Why?
It's a fair point. Although then why also do they guard trapdoors that are on the third floor? Because wouldn't that just lead at the most to the second floor?
It's magic.
Leads to a really long, long, long drop. It's so long that when they drop down, they say we must be miles underneath Hogwarts. But they don't say that in the film.
So surely they would all just die when they landed.
It's a soft landing on the plant.
Well, they haven't even got in there yet.
No.
They've just discovered the dog.
They discover the dog, and obviously the dog makes lots of noise, as only a three-headed dog can.
Lovey.
And they panic and run back to their dorms.
If you two don't mind, I'm going to bed before either of you come up with another clever idea to get us killed, or worse, expelled.
I love that line.
Such a good line.
And I do actually quite like Ron's retort.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite lines.
Time apparently moves on, which it does in these things, and it's Halloween! Hurrah!
Hey.
Oh, but first of all, we get the rules of Quidditch explained to us by Oliver Wood, which is very nice of him.
True. Which, you know, you're about to join this team, you should probably know what it's all about.
Here is a really nonsensical game. but just ignore all the other stuff I just told you, because I only told you that so that the viewers and readers will know what's going on. You just need to concentrate on this thing.
Yeah, I must admit, I did kind of miss that little bit out, because it was just like, exposition central. It's Halloween, but Hermione is nowhere to be found. She's apparently crying in the girls' toilets after Ron was mean to her.
She's been nothing but helpful and friendly, and
she heard what he was doing wrong and let him know what it was that he was doing wrong and what he needed to do instead. And then, as he requested, she then demonstrated. But apparently this makes her a nightmare.
Well, yeah, but then also these are 11-year-old kids.
Yep, 11-year-old kids. Oh, no.
Yeah, can you really expect an 11-year-old boy to have the emotional intelligence not to say something that's
But then
stupid?
We do know that Troll has the emotional range of a teaspoon.
So yes, unfortunately, Hermione is nowhere to be found. And suddenly Professor Quirrell, who we met earlier in the pub as the bumbling, stuttering Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, runs in and shouts that there's a troll loose in the
dungeon. In the dungeon!
Okay, so...
dungeon.
Just thought you ought to know.
Everybody says, why is there a troll in the dungeon? My question is, why is there a dungeon in the school?
Well, it's where two of the house common rooms are.
Yeah.
I mean, but surely if it's... That just makes it a basement at that point, not a dungeon.
No, because it's a castle. Castles have dungeons.
Yeah, you don't have a cellar. Basement is American. Cellar is English. You don't have a cellar in a castle. You have a dungeon.
So there's panic among the students until Professor Dumbledore shouts them to be quiet and to make their way back to their dorm rooms.
Make your way back to your house common rooms, two of which are located in the dungeons where that troll is supposed to be.
Said dungeon, where troll is supposed to be, yes.
Great there, Dumbledore, thanks very much.
Well, it's only Slytherins, you know, we don't care about that.
Oh, Hufflepuffs.
Harry and Ron get up to...
They don't exist at this point.
Have you actually met any Hufflepuffs by this point?
No.
Aside from Susan Bones.
So who cares about...
And again, she's only there for one reason.
Mm. Yeah.
Getting up to leave with her housemates, Harry and Ron realise that Hermione would not know about the troll because she's off elsewhere. So they head to the girls' bathrooms to get her. However, the troll has beaten them to it and attacks Hermione with a big club.
No.
Ooh, Harry and Ron attack the troll and the three of them working together manage to knock it out using... Wingardium Leviosa.
And some more bad CG.
And some very bad CG.
And
yeah,
troll bogies.
Or if you have the subtitles on, troll boogers.
Oh, really?
You've got the American version then.
Yep.
No, it's the English version, but the subtitles seem to be American.
Well, because you've got to translate everything.
Yeah, because I know there's the whole thing of boogers and bogies and...
Sweaters and jumpers.
Yeah, they translated the entire book into US English.
Yeah, we have the UK Region 2, whatever it is, DVD. And yes, the subtitles in it do say boogers and not bogies.
Did the
yeah.
subtitles also say Sorcerer's Stone, or did they say
I boogers? Don't think it did. I didn't notice if it did. But I did notice that one, and it stood out to me. And yes, I know they've probably done it so that they do one set of subtitles and not have to redo it, but... So they knock the troll out, and the troll's unconscious, and then the teachers finally turn up and demand to know what the three of them are doing away from their dorms. And this bit I didn't understand, because Hermione covers for them, saying, I thought I could take on the troll, because I've read about trolls, and I thought I could handle it. But if she'd actually just said, I was in here, I didn't know about the troll, and these two came to get me, to keep me out of trouble, surely that would have actually been better.
But it wouldn't have cemented their friendship.
Then she would have had to explain why she was in the bathroom, and maybe she didn't want to get them into trouble. Which is very nice of you.
It cements their friendship. It's very important.
True, it does indeed cement their friendship.
They've shown that they care about her by going to the bathroom to save her, so she shows that she cares about them by taking the fall for them.
So they are reprimanded but forgiven. They lose house points, I believe, for that.
They gain more points than they lose.
Harry notices a gouge on Snape's leg, and the following day Snape's seen limping. obviously, though Harry has no time to think about this, as this is the day of his first ever Quidditch match.
And a mysterious package arrives, and no one knows what on earth could be in it with that very undistinctive shape.
Yeah, so yeah, basically nerves are happening, Harry can't face food, they discuss what happened the previous night, and decide that Snape must have gotten the wood trying to get past Fluffy, past the three-headed dog, because at this point they don't know it's called Fluffy. And then there's a surprise owl delivery with a brand new broomstick for Harry.
It's a broomstick? I never would have guessed from that shape package. It's so mysterious, because they act very surprised when they open it up and discover it's a broomstick.
It's the Nimbus 2000, the fastest broomstick in the West. Obviously shocked by this, because Harry doesn't generally get post, because, well, there's no one to send him post. Turns to McGonagall, who just kind of nods, and I think it's implied that she probably bought him the broomstick.
Yeah, in the book she signed the note for it, so... Yeah.
Ah, fair enough. And you can tell it's a magical broomstick, because when the owl's carrying it, it's about 2 foot long, but when it lands and they're unwrapping it, it's got to be more like 4 foot. Which is fair enough, because I don't think you get an owl actually carrying a broomstick that length.
I'm not sure what Harry thought he was going to fly for Quidditch that morning. You'd think he'd have been worrying about that.
Well, perhaps they've got just a bunch of stock brooms that they use. They obviously had the training brooms for...
They have school brooms.
School brooms in the broom closet. Yeah.
School brooms in the broom closet.
For your school stuff.
So we've seen Team Gryffindor head out to the Quidditch field and Wood trying to calm Harry's nerves by pointing out that his first match he was knocked unconscious. Yeah, that's a great way of pepping up your teammates. But Quidditch... As you said earlier, in a world where most 11-year-olds are made to play touch rugby and not the real thing, it's good to see a school allowing its students to participate in a version of basically water polo crossed with softball, crossed with aerial dogfighting, all taking place several hundred metres above the air. What fun.
There's no crash mats or anything.
No crash mats, no safety gear. Yeah. They've got, you know, basic padding.
Nothing like that. And the padding they're wearing is basically for bludgers as well, rather than they're actually falling to their death.
Yeah, no, it's, you know. Partway through the game, Harry's new broomstick goes crazy, so I guess the lesson there is always check the warranty on your broomstick.
Harry is also terrible at his job early on. He's been told there's this one thing. You don't need to worry about anything but the snitch. One job. And he just sits there like watching, like he's in the crowd watching the match.
But it's his first game, you know. He's bound to be a bit, you know, not sure what's happening.
A bit rubbish. Honestly, I would feel like you would want to be able to, like, watch a few Quidditch matches before actually just diving into it.
It would be the equivalent of being basically set as a wicketkeeper for a game of cricket when you'd not heard of cricket more than 3 days earlier.
Yep. Right? This school makes no sense!
Partway through the game, Harry's new broomstick goes crazy and Hermione spots the evil Professor Snape muttering incantations while staring at Harry, so assumes it must be Snape that's cursing Harry's broomstick.
It's a fair assumption given what she can see and the fact that she knows that Snape horrifically bullies Harry.
True. So she runs around the stadium and up to the stand where Snape is sitting, and then kind of ignoring the fact that they're all on very flammable wooden stands several metres above the ground, set fire to Snape's robes.
I think she assumes that the teachers will be competent enough to put the fire out quickly enough.
But the fire does act, as we suspected, as a distraction, and the curse on the broomstick is lifted, and Harry can fly normally, or sit there and watch things unfold.
He starts doing tricks, even though this is his first Quidditch match, and he's doing tricks, standing on his broom, reaching forward. Really, Harry? Really?
Yeah. Thrill, spills, undoubtedly several broken bones, but in the end, Harry wins the game for Gryffindor by catching, or rather swallowing, the golden snitch. Which, as we saw earlier, was a golden ping pong sized thing with hummingbird wings and a slightly bad attitude. Harry, who is, as we were told on several occasions, the youngest seeker in a century, is the hero of the house, and they all go off to celebrate with cake and lashings of ginger beer. Probably.
Go, go, Gryffindor!
Later, whilst walking with Hagrid, they discover that the three-headed dog belongs to Hagrid and is called Fluffy. Of course it is.
I shouldn't have told you that.
No, should not have told you that. They also find out Dumbledore is using it to guard something secret that belonged to a Nicholas Flamel.
Oh, we shouldn't have told them that either.
No.
Oh, no.
And fun fact, Nicholas Flamel actually existed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he is known as the person who invented the Philosopher's Stone. So, months pass and it's soon nearly Christmas. You tell that because snow's covering the grounds and Hermione is packed and ready to go home. However, Ron and Harry are staying in school, with Ron's parents going to Romania to see their second eldest son, and Harry's parents being dead and all that.
Aww.
Too soon?
I'm sure if he really wanted to, he could have gone back to the Dursleys, but who would choose
You don't
that?
Blame him for not to, no.
But you know what I think? That the Romania story was a complete fabrication, and Ron just didn't want his best friend to be alone at Christmas.
That is certainly a possibility. But I'm sure they would need some sort of parental agreement before
Well, I'm sure he told his parents that Harry would be alone at Christmas, just like he told his parents that Harry has never got a Christmas present in his life.
Mm. I'm sure if
and
that was
I imagine Mrs.
the
Weasley
case, though,
frantically...
I think the Weasleys would have just had him at their house.
Well, yes, except that they didn't... They probably weren't allowed to take him out of the castle.
And all the other kids, all their other kids stayed at the school as well.
Okay, rain on my nice parade.
Sorry.
It's a nice theory.
I don't know.
Hermione points out this will mean they'll have more time to search the library for information on Nicholas Flamel.
In the restricted section.
Oh, it's Christmas morning, and Harry and Ron open their presents.
Oh, come on, come on. You can't just say it like that.
What? It is Christmas.
But it is Christmas morning, yes. And Ron calls out jubilantly to Harry, you know, Merry Christmas. And Harry comes to the balcony, and he looks down, and he's like... I've got presents? And it's just so heartbreaking. You know, this is the first time that he's ever had Christmas presents that people have actually given
to him.
Actually taken the time to give him, to make
to
him stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I can just imagine Ron owling his mother going, Harry doesn't have any Christmas, he's never had any Christmas presents, and Mrs. Weasley staying up until the wee hours of the morning frantically knitting a Weasley sweater and making sure that he has something to open. You can't just sum it up with it was Christmas morning and Harry and Ron opened their presents.
Well, technically that is true. So both Ron and Harry get their misshapen knitted jumpers, which is a tradition from Mrs. Weasley.
They're not misshapen, they're handmade and loving. I used to get one every year from my grandma, and I love them to bits. Quite literally in some cases.
But Harry also gets a package containing an invisibility cloak. Although there's no name on it to say where it comes from, just that it belonged to his father.
And to use it well.
Do we find out in later books where that actually came from?
Dumbledore sent it to him. James Potter had left it in Dumbledore's care because he was looking into it as being a potential Deathly Hallow.
Mm-hmm.
So this obviously is not something we find out in this film. We don't find out till later. So.
I'm not sure if they even go into that in the final films either, but it's in the books.
No. Fair enough. So yes, using his new stealth kit, Harry breaks into the restricted area of the library and tries to find more on Flamel, but fails. When he's basically spooked by the school caretaker's
the
cat.
Duke Humphrey's library was the particular bit used there, and they made an exception for the first time in hundreds of years to allow a flame in that library for them to be able to film that scene, which is something you just don't get, like, the magnitude of what a massive deal it was for them to do that when you're just, like, watching that scene in the film.
Having been inducted into the Bodleian Library in Oxford, I do know that if it's anything like that, there is very strict rules on not taking in flame or food, or which is understandable because it is a library full of very expensive, very rare and very flammable books.
The staff must have had their hearts in their mouths the whole time that scene was being filmed.
Yeah. So he gets spooked, he runs out of the library still under the cloak and comes across Snape threatening Quirrell. He sidesteps the two teachers and after listening, he backs into an unknown room where he comes across a giant mirror.
Can we take a moment before that, please, to just appreciate David Bradley and his masterful portrayal of Filch?
Hmm.
With he's just so good. He really relishes those Filch lines, you know? I found this in the restricted section. It's still hot. That means there's a student out of bed. You know, he just like, there's no one else could deliver Filch lines like David Bradley. And he's just one of those perfect castings that just, it doesn't get talked about because he's so much more of a minor character than the others. But I love David Bradley as Filch.
He's a good dude.
He looks into the mirror and sees himself standing with two adults that he... almost instinctively knows are his mum and dad. Harry runs back to see Ron and drags him back to the room to look at the mirror. However, instead of Harry's parents, Ron sees himself as Quidditch captain and prefect of Gryffindor. Harry, obsessed with the mirror, sits in front of it for hours at a time until he's interrupted by Dumbledore, who explains that the mirror shows the viewer their most heartfelt desires. However, it's insidious and many men have gone mad or simply starved to death staring into that mirror.
Well, it's the mirror of Erised,
yes.
Which is desire backwards.
The inscription along the top, which is written backwards, says, "I show not your face, but your heart's desire."
I tried to read that and didn't realise it was backwards because it's kind of fairly short shown.
Well, that's what it says.
Yeah, fair enough. So basically Dumbledore says he's going to move the mirror and Harry must not look for it. Winter turns to spring and a new term begins. Hermione, back from vacation, declares that they have been looking in the wrong place in the library and she has found out who Nicholas Flamel is.
Because she's the cleverest witch of her age.
So yes, they find out who Nicholas Flamel is. He is the only known maker of the fabled philosophers and I assume Sorcerer's Stone that can turn anything into gold, but more importantly here can create the elixir of life that can make anybody who drinks it immortal.
Well, that's not strictly true. Because they drink it and they keep living, but if they stop drinking it, then they die. So technically, it doesn't make you immortal.
They realise this is what's being guarded beneath Fluffy in the trapdoor, and this is what Snape wants. They rush to tell Hagrid, but he is preoccupied with a dragon's egg that he got off some bloke down the pub.
We know about the Philosopher's Stone.
Hmm?
Sorry, that's what they say in unison.
Ah, fair enough.
Closing the door on them. No, I'm too busy. We know about the Philosopher's Stone. Ah, you better come in then.
After a bit of cooking, the egg hatches and a young Norwegian Ridgeback dragon is hatched. Christened Norbert by Hagrid.
Thankfully, good CG, and it was adorable.
It was. They hear a noise outside and realise that Draco is outside watching them. They chase after Draco, but he gets the McGonagall before they do, and she puts Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Draco in detention for being out of the dormitories after dark. They have to spend their detention with Hagrid for some inexplicable reason. That's where they were when they were stopped. But he has a mission to perform in the forest as someone or something has been hunting and killing the forest's unicorns.
What could it be? It's Voldemort.
The forest, as they have been told, is deadly, especially at night. So obviously this is the perfect place to take first user who are in detention for being out.
And to divide into two groups so that there's
yes,
no
even better, let's split them up so that Harry and Draco are alone in the forest.
Hagrid's not best known for his use of safety, though.
No. So Harry and Draco bicker until they come across a hooded figure feasting on a slain unicorn.
Oh no, who could it be?
Draco screams and runs for it, but Harry is trapped as the hooded figure moves towards him. Suddenly a centaur bursts through the clearing. And
a really bad CG centaur. Yeah.
Scares so the wraith terrible. Away. Yeah. And it was shot in the dark and done in such a way that they just about got away with it, but it did not look good. The centaur speaks briefly to Harry, explaining that the wraith was actually the weakened form of Voldemort. Dun, dun, dun. And that by drinking the unicorn blood, it's pretty much the only thing keeping him alive. But to truly live, Voldemort needs the stone. That is the Philosopher's / Sorcerer's Stone. Hagrid, Ron, Hermione and Draco appear and they head back to school. Ron and Hermione and Harry realise that Snape isn't after the stone for himself, but to aid Voldemort. But as Hermione points out, Voldemort always feared Dumbledore, so as long as Dumbledore was at school, Harry would be safe.
Yes, let's hope he doesn't get an urgent letter from the Ministry.
Finally, exams happen, and then Harry realises that Hagrid has been used by the bloke down the pub, as he was given the dragon's egg, the one thing he always wanted, after talking to the stranger and telling him how to tame Fluffy. By singing to or playing music to them until it sleeps. They try and talk to McGonagall to talk to Dumbledore, but Dumbledore has, surprisingly, left the building. Due to a sudden call by the Ministry of Magic, he is no longer in the building, and McGonagall basically brushes them off. They think that the stranger was Snape and that he will use the knowledge to get past the trapdoor. While discussing this, Snape himself appears behind them and asks them what they're doing. And where they're not outside, saying people would think they were...
Up to something.
Yeah, that just reminded me of Rocky Horror Show. Yeah.
Oh, yes! Yeah, totally.
So, obviously, the sensible thing to do is try and get the stone themselves. So they decide to do it that night. But as they make their way through the common room, they are confronted by Neville.
He really doesn't want to lose any more house points.
No, they've cost their house an
they're
awful lot of points.
They're already at the bottom of the house point charts, and he doesn't want to lose any more.
He also doesn't want them to get into trouble.
Yes.
Does anybody know what the house points actually do? Like, do you get a pizza party at the end of the school year if you
win
the
cup,
points?
The house cup.
But what does that actually give you?
Honor, pride.
A little plaque.
So, is that it?
The banner's changed to your house.
Okay, my experience of 11-year-old children is that this doesn't really matter all that much unless there's a pizza party.
It matters to
the
heads of house.
And it matters, like, we had house competitions in our school and they were very important to us.
So yes, Neville basically says he will fight them to stop them causing more trouble. Hermione apologises, then curses Neville, paralysing him as he falls to the floor.
At least she was sorry.
She was sorry.
She didn't want to.
She's bloody scary.
Ron was rightly terrified. They all use the invisibility cloak to make their way to Fluffy's chamber, only to find the dog already asleep. An enchanted harp playing gentle tunes. They move one of its giant paws out of the way and open the trapdoor. They're considering how to get down there when they realise that the harp has stopped and Fluffy is awake.
And then a giant, drop of saliva drops onto Ron's shoulder. And the look of pure disgust.
I wonder what they made dog saliva from for the filming.
It looks like wallpaper paste.
Yeah, probably.
I bet it was just as lovely for him to get dropped on as if it was dog saliva.
Well, hopefully it was warm, because otherwise that's just
unpleasant.
Yeah.
So yes, they decide that the only option is to jump down into the chamber below.
That's where they were going anyway.
Which is where they were going, and that's where the large enraged dog isn't. Yeah. So that's always an option. They all jump down and are ensnared by a plant. Devil's snare. They start to panic, which is understandable, making the vines hold them tighter until Hermione uses her book smarts to remember that if you relax, the vines will let you go.
But of course Ron can't relax.
Both Hermione and Harry get through the vines, but Ron can't stop himself panicking and is bound tighter.
And she uses more of her book smarts.
Hermione remembers that the plant doesn't like sunlight, so uses a spell to free Ron.
I quite like this bit because they changed it slightly from the books in the film, and Hermione doesn't panic and go, how do I get fire? She just, you know, Numa Salem, and then there's sunlight, and she's just totally in control and you know, being the hero, which is
awesome. This section of the film really is we have three tests. Each one is perfectly aligned to one of the three characters.
Yes, because they didn't want to show any of the other ones.
No. So they come to the next room, which is a locked door, a broomstick, and a swarm of winged flying keys.
If only there was someone in the group who was shown that they're very good on a broomstick.
Yeah, so Harry touches the stick to get on it, but as he does so, the swarm attack him. He uses his superior flying skill to catch the correct key, get it down to Hermione, who opens the door, and they all run out of the chamber. And they continue through. Because in the book, is there not more chambers and different things?
Yeah, there are. But there's only two more.
So they continue through the chambers until they come across a large chess set. They realise this is wizard's chess, which we had seen Ron and Harry playing earlier, but on a lot smaller scale. And they have to play and win to get across the board to the door on the other side. As I say, thankfully Ron has proven himself to be a master and they manage to win, but only after Ron sacrifices himself to allow Harry to checkmate the opposing king.
With some really bad acting.
No!
Yep.
Particularly Hermione on that bit, I've got to say.
Ron is knocked unconscious and Hermione looks after him as Harry continues to the last chamber. Here he finds the mirror, as previously mentioned.
And Snape stood in front of the mirror as they expected. Oh, wait, no, gasp!
It's not Snape, it's Professor Quirrell!
Da da da! Da
da! Stuttering Quirrell? Can't possibly be him.
It shows himself seems to be the host of the Dark Lord Voldemort, who uses Harry and the mirror to locate the Philosopher's Stone, which magically appears in Harry's pocket.
Of course.
Quirrell attacks Harry, but finds that when he touches him, he simply burns away to ash. Add one to the body count.
And in the film, Harry carries out cold-blooded murder.
Well, it's self-defense-ish, possibly.
It's definitely self-defense.
It's murder, though. He doesn't do that in the book, and I think that changes his character significantly.
Voldemort forms into a smoky wraith and attacks Harry before flying off out of the chamber. Harry falls unconscious, stone still in his hand. Harry wakes up in the medical wing.
It's a good job they have that whole hospital wing.
Harry wakes up in the hospital wing. Dumbledore explains that the Philosopher's Stone has been destroyed with the agreement of Flamel, who has enough elixir to keep himself alive long enough to get his affairs in order, and that both Ron and Hermione are fine.
And you get one of the best lines where it seems like your friend Ron has helped himself to your chocolate frog.
Your chocolate frog, yes.
And then he takes a Bertie Bott's every flavour bean and says, I was unfortunate as a child to get a vomit-flavoured one.
Which exists in the world, thank you, J.K.
Ooh, but I should be safe with a nice toffee. And then just completely sort of deadpan, alas, earwax.
Tasty, tasty earwax.
And that, I just love that line, I'm sorry. It's like the detention line. And the I shouldn't have said that, you know, there's some real crackers in there.
Yeah, and Dumbledore explains that it was his magic that put the stone into Harry's pocket, because that was a little bit unclear.
It was very clever of him. He was quite proud of that.
He was.
And if Harry just hadn't gone down there, then Voldemort wouldn't have got the Philosopher's Stone because of that cleverness. But Harry had to go down and try to be a hero and make it so that he actually
So
could.
It's the final meal of the year. House points have been accounted for and Slytherin have won.
Gryffindor are last because they're rubbish.
Mainly due to the points lost by Gryffindor due to Harry and Ron and Hermione's misdemeanours. However, because everybody hates the Slytherin, even the professors and tutors.
And because Dumbledore's a Gryffindor himself.
Yeah, Dumbledore awards some last-minute points.
Slightly biased.
Yeah, there's no bias happening here.
Not at all.
He's like, he's written down the points, right? How far behind are they? Right, so how can I divvy up these extra points? That's the maths. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, so Dumbledore awards some last-minute points to Harry, Ron, Hermione and Neville.
And he could have done that at any time, but he waited until after he'd announced that Slytherin had won the House Cup and Slytherin had celebrated, and then he's like, suckers!
Nah.
But that is such a joke move.
It really is.
But as you said, everybody hates a Slytherin. yes, so Gryffindor, Daniel Leiden, they win the House Cup for the year, which is nice.
Because he awards points to Ron and Hermione and, of course, to Harry. But then the final 10 points that take them over the edge to the win, he gives to Neville. They're the first points that Neville has earned for the house and for being basically a true Gryffindor, for being loyal and standing up to his friends. And that is just a beautiful moment.
So Hagrid sees the first years back on the Hogwarts Express.
And in that final scene, that was the first scene that they filmed. So that's the only scene that we have where Harry's got the green contact lenses in that it turned out he was allergic to. And Emma Watson's got the fake book teeth in that it turned out she couldn't really speak properly with.
So they managed to edit around that. Hagrid hands Harry a photo album with a picture of Harry as a baby with his mum and dad. I assume there are other pictures in there as well, but we don't see them. And reminds Harry that although magic isn't allowed outside the school's grounds, his aunt, uncle and cousin Dudley
didn't know that. Even though his aunt probably does know that.
Yes. Yeah. So the children all pile into the train, draws out the station and away. The end.
Dun, dun, dun.
Should probably wrap this up because it's a long old film and a long old podcast.
It's 2.5 hours and it's a kid's
film.
It is. It's like... Really?
Yeah. I mean, that was my last thoughts I've written down. It's 2.5 hours. It's a very long film for kids. I know they cut a lot out of the film that was in the books originally, but there seems to be an awful lot going on, an awful lot of characters, and it's probably quite confusing for younger viewers, especially if this is their first experience of the world of Harry Potter.
Hmm.
It's just like, you know, and it works as a story, but is it because we've also read the books or we've seen the rest of the films?
For me, I love it the most of the films because it's the most faithful to the books, but I don't think from a strictly film point of view it needs to be that faithful to the books. I mean, we probably don't need them to go and see Hagrid and him have a dragon hatching and to have the detention and see Voldemort with the unicorns, you know, drinking the unicorn blood and things. It's good to have that, but if we had to cut things, we could probably do without those.
But they give them context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that Yes, it's faithful to the books, but I saw this film with people who had not read the books, and it's perfectly understandable, at least to adults, the story.
Well, yes, no, I don't think it is a problem for adults.
You know,
it's
without reading the
children.
Book. It's not like the Assassin's Creed movie, where if you haven't played the game, you probably don't have an absolute clue what is going on.
No, but as I said, it's a film for children, starring children, it seems a little overly complex.
You know, children are quite complex and quite intelligent.
This is true. We shouldn't.
If this had come out when I was, you know, 11, 12, I would have, you know, I would have absolutely loved it. I would have devoured all of the books, and I'd probably have a little wizard robe and a wand waving around, because I would have been at the age where I like to dress up. I do not like to dress up now.
Thank you for qualifying that.
I like to dress up.
Because I just imagine you wearing a wizard robes and waving a wand around.
No, that's Daisy.
I do that quite often.
This is true. Mm-hmm. So yes, Daisy, your last thoughts.
If you are a child and you don't really follow the plot of this, I think actually that's fine, because so much of it is just you're seeing this magical place and they're having magic lessons in a magic school, and you don't, you know, if you're not of an age to be able to understand the plot, I think you can still get an awful lot of enjoyment out of it because of that.
Yeah, it's visually, despite some of the slightly dodgy CGI and the age of some of the effects, it is still quite visually exciting, especially for the younger viewers. So, Sammy?
I think I haven't read the book, so I can't speak directly to the film's fidelity to the book in terms of its content, but I'll take your word for it, Daisy. My thing about that is that I don't necessarily think that a film being faithful, you know, sort of wholly to the book that it's based on is necessarily always a good thing. And in this case, it feels like, to me anyways, it felt like the film version of the pilot episode of a TV show. It's like, it felt like the encounter at Farpoint of the wizarding sort of universe. just in as much as they're trying to establish so many things, and so many things keep happening. And it just going back and watching it now, I remember watching it the first time and being sort of like, oh, this is magical and it's cute and look at all of these neat, you know, sort of magic universe things. But now actually being familiar with the Harry Potter universe and going back and watching it, it's like going back and watching the pilot episode of a TV show that you're really familiar with and just being like, oh my god, this is so long and so much happens in it, and it's literally just something that happens and then something else happens and then something else happens and then something else happens, and there isn't really a massive overarching plot that ties a lot of these things that happen together. It's just kind of a series of events.
Yeah, a lot of this was Harry finds out he's a wizard and goes to wizard school and sees what wizard school is like, and that's like half the film.
Your final thoughts, Joe?
My final thoughts are nitwit, blubber, oddment, tweak,
which sadly didn't make it into the movie.
Yeah, I don't care, because those are my final words.
I will have to accept that. Fair enough. So, next time we'll have another hit in the form of 1977's highest-grossing movie, A Small Thing Called Star Wars. We'll be back here for that in 2 weeks' time, but until then, it's goodbye from Joe.
Bye!
Goodbye from Daisy.
Bye-bye!
And goodbye from Sammy.
Adios!
And of course, goodbye from myself. Goodbye!
Catch you next time!
Thank you for listening to Home Movie Club, part of the That Podcast Thing Network. Find us on Twitter at podcast_thing, and on Facebook by searching for That Podcast Thing. Please like and subscribe for news of our future episodes coming soon.